No, he won't take it, said a voice out loud. No, we won't take it, we will stand our ground. No,
welcome to the Sarah Schultz Show, where we the people are now in session. We have a great show coming up for you today. In the first hour, I'll have Yuri Raskin with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. And then I will have Ray Yunker, Scott Witkoff, and Michael Brown coming on to discuss their new grassroots group, Wisconsin Movement. In the second hour, I'll start the hour out with Matt Rothschild from the Progressive Magazine. We'll be discussing the news from Washington, D.C. and in our great state of Wisconsin. Then we'll talk to Chris Liebenthal from the blog Cognitive Dissidents about the ongoing John Doe investigation. I'll finish out the hour with Melanie Ramey from League of Women Voters discussing their lawsuit. The phone numbers to call in, is 877-497-1797 or 310-742-1896. I also have a live discussion online at blogtalkradio.com, and you can post your comments or questions there. Now, before I get to Yuri, I just wanted to take a moment to clarify something. Now, this show is open to all legislatures. I know we have a lot of the Democratic legislatures on, and I have asked several Republican lawmakers to come on the show, and the Republican lawmakers won't. The Democrats are more than happy to come on, but the Republicans just won't come on. So just because they are not on doesn't mean they haven't been asked. It's their choice. So this show is open to all. I just wanted to make that clear, just in case there's any questions about that. They have been asked. They're just not coming on, but the ones who do come on are Democrats. So it's not that they haven't had their opportunity. Now, with that, I'd like to bring on Yuri Raskin from Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. Good morning, Yuri. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Sarah. I'm doing great. You know, when you talk about your inviting different legislators, I just keep thinking back to a Stephen Colbert quote who said that the reality has a notoriously liberal bias. So if the Republicans don't feel like coming on your show to talk about what's going on in the world around us, at least you're making a good effort of extending the invitation.
Well, the least I could do is try.
That's right.
That's right. If they don't want to come on, shoot, I couldn't even get some of the Democrat senators on it. Just another note real fast. I know Senator Jock was supposed to be on today. He ended up having to cancel due to a flight conflict. He got canceled, and then they moved his flight up. So he is not able to come on today, and I'm hoping that he will come on sometime soon. So it's not just Republicans that don't want to come on. At least they don't want to come on. Senator Jock had a conflict where he couldn't get on. So
I think the more probably would be better to say he was scheduled for a time yet to be determined. And then, you know, in the future, because canceled sounds so drastic, I mean, the man had to fly, you know.
He got stuck. He got stuck. I mean, we all been in that position where we were waiting to get on something, and then there's a delay. It could be a train. It could be a flight, you know, weather. We've all been in that position, so I don't blame him for that.
Right, and he doesn't want to be like, you know, George Clooney getting into trouble for playing a game on the plane. You know, state senator gets into trouble for talking to Sarah Schultz. That would be a great news story while the plane is in the air. Why would he do that? That would have been such great promo for your show.
I know. What's going on? He just could have called from the seat. Do they still have those? I haven't been in a plane in a while. Do they still have those phones that you could dial in for, like, a god-awful amount of money?
I think some planes still do that, but at least I think that's still an option. It's a way to make money, so I'm sure it's still available somewhere.
There's got to be. Maybe some international flights or something.
That's right. Well, let's see. Going back to the news of what's happening in our great state, we are going to have recall elections, and we have a couple of days here. Wisconsin judge signed off on an agreement Wednesday that would make May 8th or June 5th the date for recall elections against Governor Scott Walker and five other Republicans. The deal approved by Dane County Circuit Judge Richard Neese was reached a day earlier, and so we now have the dates. It's going to be, if you have a primary, it's going to be May 8th, and general election 4 weeks later on June 5th. So this is, we're getting to the wire a little bit. So hopefully we'll have more people, or I guess all the people that have been that the public has been demanding run, take this opportunity to announce they are running so we could have a full slate of candidates to choose from.
Well, it'll be interesting to see who's going to be. Go ahead. All right, thanks. I'll just jump in.
They should. It's your show. Come on.
You know, what am I thinking? You know, it would be nice to see who actually jumps in, because the thought out there, whether we're right or wrong, the thought out there for anyone who's watching this is that once they confirm all the recalls, then you'll see some other people come in to the governor's race. And so it'll be interesting to see if that actually occurs or not. I know there's been a couple names that have been thrown out there, and we still don't even have a lieutenant governor candidate right now. So it'll be interesting to see who all is going to vie for that position. I have a couple in mind, but I don't know of anyone off the top of my head who has specifically said they are definitely going to run. They're just waiting, or, you know, there's a couple been thinking about it. A couple of them look like they're going to go for higher office because they've been all over the state, but they have never made an intention. So,
well, we'll see what happens. I was up in Madison with about 60,000 other people on Saturday to see what was going on. And Peter Barker, I thought, played a very prominent role in that Reclaim Wisconsin rally. And he was walking in front of a rather large crowd together with John Nichols of the Nation. And so I wonder if Representative Barker is going to take that next step and announce. That would be certainly more consistent with what the public seems to want and with the more public image that he's undertaken. So we'll see where that goes to.
Well, and I heard, too, that his kids are coming in from New York over the weekend. That could mean nothing. Could be a visit.
See, this is how rumors start. We heard that kids are coming over. Perfect.
Yeah, it could just be a visit. It could just be, you know, family gathering. It's the pre-Easter family gathering. Maybe they couldn't come for Easter. There's a lot of reasons they could be coming down.
Or it could be for other reasons. Excellent. Well, stay tuned for that. Next, we have a Wisconsin judge on Thursday upheld his temporary injunction of the state voter identification law, a ruling that state attorneys say they will appeal. We have Dane County Circuit Judge David Flanagan, who filed a decision against the State Department of Justice request to lift his March 6th temporary injunction. And, of course, Attorney General J.D. Van Hollen said he will appeal the ruling, as well as another injunction filed in separate lawsuit challenging the law. But as far as I can tell, so far, we have no voter ID law once again. And we have, again, democracy is open to those who want to take advantage and vote, which is really great.
You know, for people who are really concerned about our tax dollars, they seem to spend it quite freely, don't they?
It's all about priorities, isn't it?
You know, it is. Why are you spending our tax dollars on a bill that's already been twice shot down?
Because, you know, those that donate to your campaign are refusing to take no for an answer. I don't know. It really is so much driven by campaign contributions. It's just interesting. So, you know, we'll see. Here in Janesville, I understand that the voter turnout was pretty, you know, was really good for the primary that we just had in our judges race. So hopefully the turnout is only going to get better now that people can vote as they were always able to before, you know, same day registration and no voter ID, because obviously there's really isn't any evidence of fraud that would require rewriting our laws. So let's see where that goes, but everyone that wants to and can and should vote in the upcoming April election, which are April 3rd.
And that only affected, and, you know, this is a question I'm actually going to pose. We have the League of Women Voters on coming up at the end of the second hour. But I believe that only affected the voter ID, correct? The rest of the bill is still intact?
That is what I've read, but this is why it's a good thing to talk to attorneys.
Well, that's why we're going to talk to the League of Women Voters coming up at 10:45, so I can ask these questions.
That's a good choice. I think they're going to be able to explain the details of the decision that affects them so intimately, since they're the ones that brought the lawsuit forward. So I think that's, you know, looking forward to that. We have also our legislature, even though the Senate is adjourned, but the Assembly is still over there busy voting on things, and there's some interesting pieces of legislation that come up because, of course, the Wisconsin GOP war on women is in full blast. You know, just in the last few days, they managed to ban any private insurers from providing abortion coverage in healthcare exchanges, to repeal the Healthy Youth Act, a statute that outlines smart approaches to providing comprehensive sex education. Now, force doctors to subject women to unnecessary physical exams before they can receive abortion care. Impose felony penalties. Isn't that a great word? Felony penalties. Say that five times fast. For physicians who do not put aside their professional judgment and follow the protocol dictated by the legislature. And that's, you know, not even really counting more things that they passed last night. You got to wonder, really, if you're a woman, why would you want to live in the state? I mean, it's just bizarre.
It is. And it's, well, the attack on women is all over. It's hard to move to a state that it's not occurring at right now. I mean, you'd have to move to, what, Puerto Rico, maybe Hawaii, maybe. I'm running out of states. I think 43 states all have had a war on women.
But I like your logic, because it's like, why should you leave Wisconsin? Well, it's just as bad everywhere else. That's why we might as well stay here and take out the battle and get engaged and stand up for our home. I think that's kind of a reasonable response to that, because we got to make it better where we live. There's an interesting video of Assemblywoman Kelda Royce, who proposed a rectal exam for men amendment to the coerced abortion bill. That's if people are looking for something entertaining, it's on YouTube. let's see, what else is going on? There's a lot of different things.
Let me give an update real fast. The Assembly is still in session. They started yesterday. It's been going nonstop. They are in session now. I just got an update from Rebecca Kemble, who is on the floor right now, who has been on the floor. That poor woman is in this for the long haul. If you're in the Capitol, please someone send Rebecca some espresso or something so she can keep up with the Assembly. But she said that they are starting the first part of the MATC debate. Now, I asked her, because I'm not up to date on what that bill does, that whole bill, I said, does that dissolve the board? She says, well, it replaces it with a smaller one that consists of business owners. So I believe, and I think that those would be appointed positions, because everything, and I can't be for certain, you're going to have to really look up the bill. If you want to watch, it's on WISGUI right now, WISGUI.org, if you're not at the Capitol. If you're by the Capitol, go in and watch this. I know there's about 70 amendments that the Democrats have to this bill, but with everything that has been introduced, everything, if there is a board, it is strictly appointed by the governor, or if there's someone else that's appointing it, it's appointed by the Assembly leader and the Senate leader, which would be the Fitzgeralds. So those are usually people that are appointing, and they're usually all appointed. I would recommend you look up that bill. But they are in discussion of it right now. This could go a long time, especially the 70 amendments that they have to it. And just a little side note for everyone living in Assembly District 32, Tyler August is now the Speaker pro tem. So that should be a good time.
Oh, my goodness.
So that is what's going on. And they also, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I wanted to say they also passed bills yesterday. They passed five bills, and I couldn't pull them up. I had them up, and the site went down, and I'm not going to be able to find them right now. They had five bills passed within a half hour from 11 to 11:30. One of the bills, I think it's Bill 402, that overhauls workers' compensation. It's a huge overhaul of workers' compensation. That was passed with five bills in half hour. Then they passed 10 bills in 4 hours yesterday from 3 to 7 p.m. They were on number four this morning at 5:30, 6 o'clock, I think they have another 30 more bills left to pass, including...
They need about 5 minutes for that?
I'm sorry?
They need about 5 minutes to pass 30 bills? It would take them very long.
It could. They could, apparently. You know, the Democrats have been talking about different things. They've been pulling up different bills that they've been trying to get on the floor. They haven't been on the floor. They had a huge debate this morning for about an hour and a half about the campaign fund that Walker raided, the $1 million that are the people's money that is actually now in the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
So they did had a discussion on that. But I don't know how long it's going to go because apparently the Speaker Pro Tem is cutting people off. And so they could pass 30 bills in another 20 minutes.
Right.
Should be interesting.
Interesting is, yeah, an understatement. Something interesting that I think is, and of course, the word interesting is so interesting. The doors to the assembly chambers have been taped shut because, really, frankly, our good friend Arthur Cole Riggs, who managed to get some great footage of Representative Clayfish voting for representatives who were not there, which, from what I heard, is standard operating procedure over there, but nonetheless, it just looks awful on video. You know, we talked about this. So now Arthur's camera has been taken away and by the Capitol Police, and he's trying to bring some attention to that fact because it is embarrassing to our democracy that, you know, we have to have doors to legal proceedings taped shut, that you can't bring camera in there, that you can't film legal proceedings however you feel inclined. You know, I've served for 4 years on city council, and you know, I know how important it is to have as many different angles and views and points of view at any legal proceeding, but when you have lawmakers making these important decisions, it's just bizarre that we would want to say, you know, you can have, what is it, Robin Voss said, that you can have guns or cameras, but you can't use either one. Well, evidently you can carry in a gun, but you can't carry in a camera. So we're really excited, I guess, in the state of Wisconsin that the guns are safer than cameras. So, and that's just wrong. So I'm trying to kind of bring a little more light to struggle because Arthur has done so many good things, and he still doesn't have his camera back, and he and several other protesters were just convicted of, I'm not sure exactly what they were convicted of, but for causing disruptions. I think they were found $200 each as a fine by jury in a jury trial. And these are good people that are trying to make our, you know, bring attention to what's going on in our state. So there's some interesting things happening there kind of outside of the view of Wisconsin Eye.
Well, and just to let people know, if you want to look at that video of the 38th Assembly District person, that would be Clayfish, who is voting for three or four different people that is actually forbidden by the state statutes. You could go on YouTube and look that up, I believe. Put in Clayfish. I think all you should do is go under YouTube and then put in Clayfish voting many times or something of that nature, and you'll be able to pull it up, but it's off of YouTube. And there was something else I was going to add, but I'm going to let you continue on. I
found this post here actually from Jenna Pope, who is one of the more prominent protesters, and she wrote that all six of us were found guilty, $200 fine plus court fees, can request expungement in a year and a half, can't have arrest during that time. And the six protesters were found guilty of resisting or obstructing an officer for protesting and not leaving on August 25th, 2011. And there you have Segway Jeremy Ryan, Jenna Pope, Thy allegedly, DJ, redact my middle name, Terrell allegedly, and Damon Terrell, and Alex Overly. So we have some people who are, they shouldn't be in this kind of trouble. I'm not saying they deserve a monument because nobody's perfect, But for crying out loud, we live in a democracy where people should be able to express themselves within reason. So I think this is just a little unnerving because you know that they're not going to step back. And so that means that there's a pretty good chance that all of them could get, or some of them could get arrested again during that year and a half. And that means just more trouble, and that means more record is being built for these people who are putting their lives on the line for our state. That should be unnerving to anyone.
And Jenna, she might call in today, but most likely she'll be on next Friday to talk about it, because I want her to come on to discuss. I'll see if I can get a couple of them to come on and discuss it, because it, I believe it's a federal offense, wasn't it? Didn't they fine them for a federal offense instead of a misdemeanor? Or
sure.
it was a higher offense. It wasn't just a misdemeanor. This was a higher offense. I can't exactly remember what. But that's why Jenna's going to come on and discuss it, because this is going under the radar of a lot of stuff. And also with Arthur Coles Riggs, that camera that he had when he got – because he just got arrested again for having the camera, but the camera itself was not on. He was not taking pictures. He does not have a case for it, so he walked in. It was obvious it wasn't on. He actually put it under his shirt, so he tried to put it under his shirt because he wasn't going to leave it unattended because it's a very nice camera, and that's when they removed him from the gallery.
Exactly. And there's, you know, I wonder who took the footage of him being taken out of the assembly chambers, because it was shot from below, so that would lead me to wonder if there was one of the representatives that actually made them took that footage. But that
or,
could be something interesting.
Or it could have been one of the media. Could have been some of the media.
That's true.
Because media is on the floor as well. So you're listening to the Sarah Schultz Show. Sarah Schultz. Right now we're talking with Yuri Rashkin from Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. If you're tuning in to listen to Senator Jauch, he is en route to I don't know where he's traveling, but he's traveling. He couldn't be on the show today. We're hoping to reschedule him for another time. Now, Yuri, have you heard or direct knowledge of the right-wing pushback on the Rush Limbaugh situation?
The pushback, I don't know. There's Peggy Noonan that seems to have written something about it. But basically, you know, he lost, 140-plus major sponsors. In fact, I believe that at this point he's got no major sponsors left. And even some of the free advertisements, public service announcements that are played during his show have requested not to be played during his show. He worked pretty well last Saturday on Saturday Night Live, and that's, you know, so the Rush is not in a particularly good shape here. So we'll see what happens next with him.
That cracked me up when I heard that. When I heard that the public announcements were pulling themselves, because that's all they had left. He had dead airspace for a while. Now they're playing a lot of public announcements through most of his show, and it's the public announcements are pulling it. Who was that? Who was the public announcement person who pulled that? That was
either Heart Association or Cancer Association.
Yeah.
Somebody, yeah.
It was a rather important one, actually, who pulled it and said, we don't want you to air our stuff. This is free. It's free. And they're telling them not to air it. There's a list of people out who are saying, we don't want to be part. And this is actually a very important aspect of this. There's a list of advertisers out, over about 100 people are on this list, 100 advertisers, businesses, that are saying we do not want to be part of any kind of talk that can be construed as derogatory, basically. And so not only does that cut out Rush, but you're talking Vicky McKenna, you're talking Charlie Sykes, you're talking Savage, you're talking, you just think of some of the right-wing talkers who tend to just talk hate talk, basically. I have no other way to describe it. I'm sure they have nice things to say too, but there's just a lot of violence that they talk about, and it actually included those in there. They actually listed Savage and several others in there. So not only are they getting away from Rush, but they're getting away from all these people who are spewing this stuff.
Well, and potentially another problem for Rush is that Mike Huckabee's radio show is getting rolled out all over the nation. And so now he's got a competitor on the right that will be vying for that same time on radio stations. So Rush is being attacked and pushed from all sides when he's really at his weakest. I mean, we haven't seen him be in that kind of vulnerable situation if ever. And it's interesting if this is what's going to be what takes Mr. Limbaugh down, because boy, it seems like it would be certainly a happier place in the world if that program wasn't on.
Well,
he can concentrate on just his golf game and then doing all the other things he does.
And smoking cigars. Can't knock him for that, though. Now, Huckabee is the one. I believe they've even said that some of these people, some of the sponsors have said, we'd rather be at Huckabee's or be on that show instead of Rush Limbaugh. So that I found was interesting. It was Huckabee that's coming out against Rush. So it should be.
Correct.
You're right. It should be very interesting. And do you know, by the way, have you noticed that the Tea Partiers are kind of calling some of these progressive radio shows and showing up at Democratic political events, which is good? You know, it's fine that it's open to everyone, and I think it's great to expand your view of the world. But it seems that they're coming on and trying to cause some ruckus. Have you seen or heard anything of what's going on with that? Because, and I don't want to just say Tea Parties, it could be anyone, but it just tends to be some of these neocons. That's how it's kind of the reference I like to use with them, the neocons that are coming out, and just they don't debate to try to expand or try to prove a point. They just debate to debate.
Well, I think it's a very interesting point, because on Facebook and in kind of blogosphere, there's always talk about the trolls. And really, who is a troll and who is the person that's just trying to represent a different point of view? And I think that as long as a person is contributing something to the conversation and bringing different facts and whatever they want to say, even if their facts that they offer don't line up with the facts that, you know, I'm offering, that's fine. As a wise man said, we're entitled to our own opinions, but we're not entitled to our own facts. Well, these days, there's facts for everybody. But when people start to come in and just spew insults, well, that's a troll. So I think that if people are showing up at left-leaning events and they're there to comment or to observe or to participate in a rational fashion, that's super. This is democracy in action. That's what this is what democracy looks like. It's when people show up and they're basically there to just cause havoc and to be disruptive for no good reason. Well, then that's a troll who lives under the bridge and feeds on goats, I guess. So we should just try to draw a distinction. And just because somebody disagrees with us doesn't necessarily mean that they're wrong and we're right. But it's the way in which this conversation is conducted that is so important.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. If you want to come and discuss ideas, I have no problem with that. I think it's great, because I have changed opinions from some of the things I've heard from seeing things from different points of view, because it's my right to change opinion when I want to. That's an opinion. But when someone comes in and just starts debating you just to get you riled up or starts spewing insults at you to debate, there's no reason for that, and there's no benefit from it.
That's right. A couple of other things that I'd like to throw out there before we wrap it up. We have, the analysis came out about the 250,000 jobs proposal. We are going to have 250,000 jobs, new jobs, if we're going to keep moving at the same pace, by 2056, which I think is a marvelous number, and I hope to live that long to see that fantastic year come around. But really, that's not going to be nearly sufficient unless we're going to have people moving out of Wisconsin left and right because of the laws passed by the legislature. A highlight of how ineffective this governor's policies have been in creating jobs in Wisconsin, which is really what we came in. Keep coming back to is that instead of trying to stimulate the economy and make people want to start businesses and expand businesses and move businesses to Wisconsin, we're basically just working on trying to limit freedoms of our own citizens and try to show how right-wing we are, which does nothing for the state of Wisconsin. It doesn't improve the economic climate, doesn't encourage people to be more engaged in economic activity. That's what I thought the job of legislature was for. But apparently, you know, they say that they don't like government, and then they pass laws that continue to insert government into places where it has no business being.
like, you know, women's bodies.
Right. What was it, the cartoon that was floating around the internet lately? There's about, like, a little elephant that is in the uterus, and something got in the uterus, and it's a GOP elephant.
Yeah, I'm going to pass. I know what you're talking about, but I'm not going to comment on that. But if you like to go online, I'm sure Yuri will find it on Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup and post it so you can read it. It is amusing, and
that's right.
I will leave it
at
that.
I do believe that people should be informed about what's going on, and we have a lot of different information posted on Defend Wisconsin News Roundup, and I think that being informed is the best thing you can do. So we've got... there's always something coming up. It's really exciting to see, for instance, Lori Compass and all the progress she's making with her campaign, putting really squeeze on Fitzgerald and forcing him to run a campaign he probably is not used to running at all in the first place. And now he's being pressured to talk to his constituents about his policies and defend his leadership, so-called. There's some really good things that are happening in our state as well as some of the troubling things, and it's just nice to balance those out.
Yes, things will change. Things will change.
Sure.
Right now, there are some bills that I question. There are some bills that I don't see how they're benefiting Wisconsin. There's a lot of bills I don't see how they're benefiting Wisconsin, and I think that's what our government should do. So I think we can change this. Actually, I can't change it, but I think the people out there can change it, and I think that there can be bills that will benefit Wisconsin more, like creating jobs, economic development, helping those who are struggling. A lot of those bills came through.
I was speaking with a friend of mine who was a protester in the 70s and 80s, and she's still out there. And she was saying how disappointed she was because she spent all this time in her youth and through her life fighting for these things, for women's rights, for different issues. And now she sees the assembly just take them away as if her efforts were for naught. And she found it very frustrating. And I think there's two points there. And first, which is it's easy to make some kind of legislative difference there, because hopefully as quickly as these things are reversed, we can fix them once we get the majority, once we're able to control some branches of the government so that people can have a voice in the government again. And the other thing is that progress, it's not a destination, it's a process. And we don't just get to a point and go, well, we got here, everything's great now, we can sit back and relax and not worry about it. It's just not how it works. Because if one side is not making progress, then the other side is. And vigilance is the price of liberty. We have to remember that even when we win this battle, if we go, this is great, and we sit back and we forget about it, the other side is going to start making advances. So it's very important to remember what happens now, and that's why it's so great that there's pictures and videos and all of those things that are being documented, because at some point we're going to be victorious, and then it's important not to lose that momentum.
Well, Yuri, thank you so much for being on. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you next Saturday. Friday.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
It is, yes. It's Friday, not Saturday. I've been a day ahead since Wednesday, so I don't know. I'm not sure why I'm rushing this, but yes, have a great St. Patrick's Day. I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Yuri Raskin with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. You can see... read his stuff at on Facebook at Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. I know there's a website for him as well. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz. We'll be right back.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Government programs and Obama administration policies are helping cut the unemployment rate for veterans. Jesse Russell reports.
The jobless rate for veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars has dropped sharply over the last year. At this time last year, the unemployment rate for veterans stood at 12.5%, well above the national average. Today, thanks to governmental programs, employers giving preference to returning vets, and union retraining initiatives like helmets to hard hats, that unemployment rate is 7.6%, now below the national average, which is 8.3%. One of the most often cited successes in changing the state of unemployment for vets is the Obama administration's Returning Heroes and Wounded Warriors tax credits. Under Returning Heroes, employers receive a credit of $2,400 for hiring a veteran who's been unemployed for more than 4 weeks. The Wounded Warriors tax credit provides $4,800 to companies who specifically hire disabled veterans. The federal government has also made hiring veterans a priority. In August of 2011, the Obama administration claimed it had directed the federal government to provide employment for more than 120,000 veterans.
A Wisconsin Republican state representative who forced cancellation of an art in protest conference at the University of Wisconsin is now trying to get a labor political cartoonist charged with a felony for a satirical press release. After Republican Wisconsin state representative Steve Noss threatened funding for the University of Wisconsin School for Workers over the art in protest event that was to feature art used in the Wisconsin uprising pro-labor protests, the school canceled that event. Labor artist and political cartoonist Mike Konopacki is now being threatened with a possible felony charge for sending a satirical press release with lawmakers' letterhead that was briefly published in a Madison newspaper. The press release said Representative Noss was trying to suppress the display of Wisconsin protest artifacts from the Smithsonian. Konopacki says the real story here is the suppression of free speech by Noss.
The point of it is that nobody is asking about him suppressing the right of people to express themselves, to hang art at the University of Wisconsin, to participate in free expression at the University of Wisconsin. And then also nobody is questioning his right to intimidate me as an individual, because they're going after me personally.
Konopacki believes that his parody press release is protected free speech. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show with host Sarah Schultz. We are speaking with Michael Brown, Scott Witkoff, and Ray Yonker from the group Wisconsin Movement. Good morning, guys.
Good morning,
Sarah.
Now, if you guys want to let Scott respond a little bit, because I know he's got about 10 minutes he's got to go, then you guys can jump in after that. But I have a question for all of you. Now, according to your website, the Wisconsin Movement is a political cooperation. Can you define what a political cooperation is? And how is this grassroots organization different than the rest of them out there? And why? And one more with this, why do you feel we need another grassroots organization?
Well, yeah, I'll just give a quick background here, and then I'll leave, and Michael and Ray can take over. Thanks for having all of us on. So we, the three of us, along with other people, have identified a void in all the grassroots organizations. And that's not to say that they're not, you know, relevant. And obviously we need every single grassroots organization around the state. But what has occurred spontaneously and organically to start this movement remains very spontaneous and organic, and there's nothing wrong with that. But obviously, to change the politic in Wisconsin and to take back democracy for the people and overcome the tremendous amount of corporate power and influence on both parties, there needs to be something to bring all those people and all those groups together at the local level and engage them locally. The other thing that our group does, and none of the other groups do, and being a political co-op, I think this is probably the first of its kind in the state, is that it is literally a bottom-up organization and the power is derived from the members of the grassroots organization. So everyone that joins a co-op will have the voice in the organization. So unlike groups like One Wisconsin Now and United Wisconsin and any of the other groups you can name that are all top-down organizations, and a lot of them take their lead from, for example, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. And again, nothing wrong with that. We need all those organizations, but they are all very much a top-down, you know, group of organizations that people end up following, and not all the time are the people's voices relevant in what they do necessarily as far as direct action. So our group will take the people's initiatives derived from the voting power of the people in the cooperative at the grassroots level and turn that into direct action around the state at the local level through volunteer action for candidates, for legislation, and we'll also be able to disseminate information about legislation and initiatives and policies and legislators around the state through that direct action. So this is a very exciting and new idea for an organization, and that gives you some of the background of what we're all about.
How is that different, though? You guys talk about the different grassroots organizations, and you talk about a lot about the top down versus the bottom up.
Right.
Now, there are groups out there that are saying they're also bottom up, like you have Nate Tim's group that North Shore Progressives, Oregon Area Progressives. They're all a grassroots and pretty, but they're all pretty, you know, in one area, but they're still a pretty good grassroots organization.
Right. Well, the voting power of our group will be in the people who are the volunteers in the organization. And the board of directors will act on the platform chosen by the grassroots volunteer members through a convention style. So we have a platform on our website, which is what is the principal ideas that guide the organization. And the grassroots members will be able to vote and adopt or add to or revise on an annual basis the platform of the organization that will be the guiding principles throughout the year. And that's very different from any other organization out there. The board is acting directly upon that platform to take action statewide. And at the local level, which will translate into statewide action. And we are also looking to kind of act as a clearinghouse also for volunteer action around the state, working with all these other organizations and having the ability to kind of harness grassroots energy around the state. You know, not only on behalf of other grassroots organizations, but as I said, candidates, legislation, initiatives, platforms, policies, things like that. So it's a very different makeup for groups. And if people go to the website, WisconsinMovement.com, and look at the platform and look at what the idea of the group is all about, you'll see it's a very unique organization that I think is very much needed in the state because we have to try to counter, the vast network of conservative groups that are all, you know, take your marching orders, and we don't want to be that type of group, but we want to be able to have people's energy, you know, focused locally where they want to be so that, you know, people can band together in organizations around the state and small communities and all work together, you know, toward the concept of taking back the state for the people. And that's what our movement represents.
So basically,
our organization represents.
It basically gives people a voice. Basically, everything that the group does is dictated by the people within the group.
Yes,
that is, that is Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was just going to say that's correct. There's a slogan I had earlier with because there's some background that you would ask why we're different, and I think all three of us bring credibility and experience to the table. I'm obviously, for your viewers that don't know, I'm the founder of United Wisconsin. Ray Younger is a founding board member of United Wisconsin. The last year we've been involved up to our neck, so we really feel like we have our finger on the pulse. We're fulfilling a need that is definitely out there. And there was a saying that I came up with, putting people first. And that's something that I think is definitely overlooked in this day and age. I think, you know, we have the opportunity right now to finish something that we started. And quite frankly, instead of just talking about it, this organization is going to do something about it. And we're going to lock arms together as one person, together collectively. And that's really what Wisconsin Movement is about. It really is what democracy looks like. I mean, it's there's no better saying to summarize what Wisconsin Movement is about. It is the true definition of democracy.
So is this a group that other groups can kind of come into and be part of and help direct where this group is going? So you could have the groups I mentioned before, the Nate Timms group, the Oregon Progressives, the North Shore Progressives. If those groups wanted to come in, they could. Is that, that's kind of more like an umbrella-ish thing going on?
Absolutely. The idea of the organization is to provide the communications network, the data infrastructure, the access to the, you know, at their direction, if somebody from Oregon Progressives wants to get a meeting with somebody at WEAC, I mean, they can certainly do it themselves, but what we've found is we've, you know, over the past year, we've generated a number of relationships at high levels that are very useful. But what we want to provide is both the resources to be effective locally, regionally, and at the state level for grassroots organizers and grassroots volunteers. And, you know, we've talked to a number of people around the state, and they've all said, you know, the movement itself, I mean, there's really two things going on. There's the movement against what's being tried to be propagated by the far right, and then there's the movement to recall Walker, which is really an important part of that, but we felt that it was time to kind of step back and see how this really happened. And what really happened was people at the local level made it happen at the local level. And we just see that this is bigger than that. If we win all the recall elections, not one piece of legislation that's been pushed through in the last year will get reversed. We have a lot in front of us, and we felt there needed to be an organization that's ready to go to the next level and take us through the process of reversing all this damage that's been done. And we can't supplant all these local groups. The change needs to happen locally, it needs to happen at the county level, and it has to happen at the state level. And, you know, the way the Tea Party pretty much took over our government 2 years ago, we have to get organized and take it back. And we looked around and we didn't see anybody else doing that. And then the other thing we heard from our volunteer interaction is that volunteers are not feeling that they're engaged or have a voice. They're just given a list of things to do and marching orders. And what we saw through the recall is the ones that were most effective were the ones that were doing it on their own. So rather than telling them what to do, we want to ask them what they want to do and then help them do it.
So you guys... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I need to run, but I want to just add to what both Michael and Ray said. What Ray said hit the nail right on the head, because democracy starts locally. And all the people in all the counties, they know instinctively what needs to happen to reverse what's happened under Scott Walker and the GOP this past year. But if you have an organic movement that just exists very fluently and fluidly, you need to be able to harness that energy at the local level for people to direct and drive change that happens locally. And that is the vehicle that we are offering with, as Ray and Michael said, provide connections to get the job done, as well as resources that, you know, other groups not only don't have, but don't make available to the average volunteer at the local level. So that's a great summation. And I'm going to run. You guys have a great weekend.
Thanks, Scott. You too. Enjoy the beautiful
care,
weekend.
Scott.
You too.
Oh, that was Scott Witkoff. The other two are still going on, so they're still here. We have Mike Brown and Ray Yonker still here with Wisconsin Movement. Now, what's the possibility of this group turning into like a progressive news network as well, since it sounds like you guys want that website to be where people go to and see what's going on across the state with progressive organizations and with what your group is going to be doing?
We're going to do whatever the people tell us to do. I mean, that really is our job as an organization is to fill the void, fill the need, because people know what they want, and we just need to make sure that there's an organization that's watching out for them and giving them what they want. And right now, I think what we need is obviously, there's a lot of healthy debate going on right now about who the candidate is going to be, you know, to go after Scott Walker and take the governorship back. And what we're doing right now on WisconsinMovement.com, we're having the candidate bracket challenge. What we're doing is we're taking a fun spin on March Madness right now, and we rank the top eight potential candidates based on the most recent public policy poll. So we ranked the candidates 1 through 8, and we have right now, if you go to WisconsinMovement.com/vote, you can go on there, you can we have 3 rounds, and you can vote on your favorite candidates. And what we're going to – it's our very unique spin on our poll of who is going to represent Wisconsin. And it's just obviously a snapshot in time, but we're just taking a unique spin on it to get the word out and have a little fun, too, on the side as far as, you know, March Madness. But it definitely is a serious question is – who is going to run for governor, and who is going to be leading us, in the 2013 and on.
So how is it that you guys are going to be able to get behind a candidate? Because you said this is a co-op, a political co-op. Now, how is that going
Well, that's where I think the real unique – advantage that we have is we're forming, political organizations can form as a PAC or a 501c3 or a 501c4. They can also form, and there's a lot of rules on those particular types of political organizations. This organization is different. There's talk about whether you can be an LLC, and then you're almost limitless in what you can do as an organization. You could be a super PAC, and that's almost limitless. But that's sort of using the tools of the other side. We wanted to come up with a more democratic and member focused organization type. And as I was discussing this with one of our attorneys, probably a month ago, it just came. The attorney said to me, this sounds like a cooperative, in the truest sense. If you have a farmer cooperative, a grain cooperative, or a worker cooperative, it's really run by the members of the organization. There are staff people and if it's a grain cooperative, there's people running the grain silo. But this organization is using that business structure to both give the power to the membership, but also to give us the freedom to coordinate as freely and openly as possible with the different groups. And if you spend any time working with or for a PAC, you find out really quickly that there are limits to what you're able to do in terms of coordination. But as a cooperative, we can operate on a number of different levels that we can't when we have the political rules restricting us. And then the other huge advantage is that there'll be candidates and issues maybe on a national or regional level or state level that have lots of funding that they can throw into a specific campaign. And we can take those funds that they can pay to us as an organization, and we can use those to help support local efforts where maybe funding doesn't exist for local candidates to run or to have access to the really good, here's some amazing data and information management tools for local political, for political use. But, you know, once the big campaigns shut down, the access and ability to use those generally shut down with it. And, you know, there's going to be races every 3 or 4 months for the next, you know, into eternity. And we don't want the organization to shut down in an off election year. We got to keep the pressure on constantly moving forward. This isn't going to be over when the first recalls are done. We've got to be ready to go after the assembly and defend the governor's seat when we get it back. We have to be prepared, and we just see this as a great opportunity to do that.
Okay, I have one more question for you, and we've got about 2 minutes left, so if you guys could answer it. You know, you mentioned Americans for Prosperity before, and they're looking to develop grassroots organizations. Do you feel that they have any sense of how they are constructed? And to put it back to your group, do you feel that yours is going to be, once it's up and going and get the people into it, because it will take a little bit to get people to come in, do you feel that you are going to be able to offset or push back from what Americans for Prosperity would be doing?
Well, I will say, as far as American Prosperity goes, they're just one of several groups that are out there that are, you know, they're doing that. They're going the opposite direction that we're supposed to be going in. So, I mean, specifically commenting on them, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they don't really matter. What really matters to me, and what matters, I think, to this organization is we figure out collectively where do we want to go, and, you know, together we're going to have the numbers. We're going to have the people behind us. And ultimately, at the end of the day, our organization will make those organizations irrelevant in Wisconsin, because when you have the full voice of the people swinging in the same direction at the same time, I've seen it with my previous venture with United Wisconsin, good things are going to happen. And that really is what this movement, Wisconsin movement, is really about, is, you know, we've already proven that we can do this as a state. And, you know, now we just need to get on board together and, you know, from the bottom up, move this state forward in the right direction. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, I think the distinction to be made here is that what Americans for Prosperity is about buying influence and buying people and buying elections. And that's not what we're about. We're about empowering volunteers and volunteer organizations locally, regionally, at the state level, to accomplish what they need to accomplish. What we learned over the last year is that however you're organized at the state level doesn't matter if the local organizations aren't getting it done on the ground. And that's what we want to do. We want to help people get it done on the ground rather than send you lists of names and instructions on what to do. We want to provide you the data, and we want you to tell us how you're going to use it and what you need to be successful in whatever your goals are or collectively as an organization statewide goals are. And that's the difference. What we've learned through Walker spending $12 million and not changing his polling numbers, and we still collected all the signatures, almost double what we needed to recall them. People power works. We can combat these organizations by being organized and united.
All right. With that, give me the website real fast again for people who maybe came in late.
It's WisconsinMovement.com.
Okay, WisconsinMovement.com. Good luck, guys. Thank you so much for being on today. I have Mike Brown and Ray Yunker. Scott Wyckoff was on earlier, and they are starting a new group called Wisconsin Movement. Thank you so much. I hope you guys can come back on and see. We can talk more about how your grassroots organization is going.
Thank you, Sarah. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks. Well, I have a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Matt Rothschild from the Progressive Magazine and some breaking news that's coming out of the Assembly and the Capitol. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz. Welcome back. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz. Now, before I bring on Matt Rothschild, I am going to just say that the Assembly is still in session, and they are talking about the MATC board still. They had 70 amendments to that bill, so they'll be talking about that for a while. Right now, they were mentioning about, and I guess it's from Rebecca Kimball, that the taking over the MATC board to put Senator Grossman's friends from Ozaukee and Washington counties on it. So that's what they were discussing just a few minutes ago. And I know Ice Fisher mentioned it in the chat room, but there was a tweet that went out from Senator Taylor's office that said, let me get the tweet and I can get it, read it. It says, alert, this is from Senator Taylor's office again from her Twitter account, alert Senator Pam Galloway under recall from Wausau plans to resign from the Senate today. And she says, we'll keep you posted. So if you're going to follow that, go to @SenTaylor, @SENTAYLOR to follow that. And on that, I'd like to welcome Matt Rothschild from the Progressive Magazine. Good morning, Matt. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Sarah. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, thank you for coming on. Now, let's. Do you want to start talking about the Assembly? Because the last couple sessions have been long. Like I said, they're still in session now from yesterday, and they are passing some horrendous bills they're going through. I know I was reading some of what Rebecca Kimball had written about the different bills, and one of them is an overhaul on the workman's comp that was passed with five other bills in a half hour. They passed 10 bills in 4 hours. It's just absolutely ridiculous, some of the bills they're passing. One of them is on floating toilets.
I mean, it's been an incredible session. I mean, when you take the whole thing in total, I mean, when you start from the devastating attack on workers' rights where they began, and the ending here this week with the attack on women, the banning insurance coverage, private insurance coverage for abortions from the new health insurance exchanges that need to be put up before 2014, and then doing this ridiculous abstinence-only requirement for schools to have. I mean, it's about as reactionary a legislature as you can ever imagine here. And they haven't been worried about jobs. They've, you know, worried about their social agenda. And they're just ramming it through here in the last minutes, too.
Yeah, there's been, what, maybe one thing on jobs, and that was WIDA with economic development and expanding some money to WIDA, which is under the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which has Foley and Lautner secretary, or Foley and Lautner person as the treasurer. So it's just more money to Walker's buddies.
Yeah, it's definitely rewarding their moneyed friends, and really that's what it's all about. One of the amazing things about this legislature and Walker's agenda, though, is state politics is often about rewarding the moneyed people, but usually they do it in the dark. And one of the great things about the last year is there's been all this focus on the legislature itself, a lot of it from citizen journalists like you and Rebecca Kimball, people who haven't usually been covering it, because the corporate media's coverage of what goes on in the Capitol has been so paltry, to put it nicely, over the last many years. I mean, Wisconsin Public Radio does an okay job, but the State Journal and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel don't do a great job on it, and neither does Isthmus or the Capital Times. And as a result, you know, it's hard to figure out what's going on up there. And it used to be that that's how the corporate lobbyists liked it, because they wanted to be able to do their stuff in the dark. But this year, you know, the Republicans didn't seem to mind. They do it in front of everybody and God, too. And that's what they've been doing. And so it's just been this huge power grab in front of everybody, naked power grab.
It's kind of like having the speaker in the U.S. House of Representatives, Bonner, come on and hand out checks from the lobbyists right on the floor.
Tobacco lobbyists. I mean, that's what he used to do.
Just kind of out in the open. At least we know where we sit. So
yeah, and again, the fake phone call from the Koch brother, David Koch, was a very illuminating thing, because that's how our system works. The politicians are in hock to the big billionaires and multimillionaires and want to carry their water. I mean, you couldn't have heard a more eager water carrier than Walker in that phone call.
And he was very happy, to do it. I'll fly you down to Cali. Outstanding.
He didn't want to get off the phone, man. He was willing to stay on the phone as long as the rich guy was paying the bills.
Oh, it's sad. Now, there has been a war on women, especially in this session, the March 1st to the March 15th session. They must have saved it all for this point. Apparently, and then most of this has come from the GOP. All of it has actually come from the GOP. Apparently, they don't realize that half their voting constituents is women. I'm not sure. I know this war is also going on at the federal level, and it's going on in a lot of states. But this seems absolutely ridiculous that we have horrible job rate right now. Our economy is starting to stall. In the state of Wisconsin is not stalled already. In my village, it's stalled. And yet we're talking about women's right to birth control. And it amazes me that we have to even discuss this.
Well, it sure is baffling, isn't it, that this is what they're doing now? I mean, it's just unreal. And yet that's where they're at. I think it's a losing strategy for the Republicans down the line, and I think they'll regret it politically, but foolishly, they don't know any better. I mean, they can't stop themselves. They're so kind of addicted to this right-wing agenda that that's what they keep doing. And, I think nationally it's going to hurt the Republicans, though I still think that Romney's going to have a decent shot against Obama when all is said and done. And the polls that were out this week were suggesting that, yeah, it's not going to be the cakewalk that a lot of liberals think it's going to be. It's going to be a tough race nationally. But this can't help, this assault on women's basic contraceptive rights and certainly Santorum's ridiculous rhetoric on the subject, or Rush Limbaugh's for that matter.
What is it? What do you feel, or why do you feel this was brought up now? What's the spark in this? Is this trying to lead up to get the base fired up for the presidential election coming up in November? What do you feel is the start of all of this?
Well, there are two different things. One, in Wisconsin, it's just let's grab as much as we possibly can. Let's get as much in there while we have the power, because the power is going to be fleeting, and we better get it while we can. Nationally, I think it was a strategy by Santorum to try to differentiate himself from the other candidates, and especially from Romney, and to say that he's the real conservative. And so that, as a consequence, is he's really hyped that up. And I guess it looks like it's probably helped his campaign in the short term, but it's going to hurt the party in the long term, and that's their crisis right now.
Well, and it seems to be, just getting into that real fast, Santorum seems to be very popular if you're rural areas, and that's where a lot of these social issues are a big deal. In your city areas, you're seeing Romney being popular, and I think Romney's hitting more on the economic standpoint of things.
Yeah, I think that's right, and Romney's more popular the richer you are, which is understandable because he's for the rich. I mean, he's basically said as much, and he's an apostle of free market capitalism that has destroyed jobs in the hundreds and thousands and millions across the country. But that's what he wants to campaign on. You know, he wants to campaign on his millions and millions and say what a great businessman he was. It's interesting. There's an article in the New York Times today about Bain Capital. A company that they own has been selling surveillance equipment to the Chinese government. Well, I mean, it just shows the amorality of that doctrine, and also the amorality of Mitt Romney. But I still, when you look at it, I still think Romney is going to be the candidate. He's going to win now that he's out of the South, more delegates than Santorum. One thing is he going to be forced to take Santorum as a VP? I mean, that would be a uniting thing for the Republican Party, but I think a devastating thing for the party in its chances nationally against Obama.
Do you think Santorum would be better than the governor from Texas that bowed out earlier, or some of the other ones that bowed out?
As vice president? Oh, I think they're all, it's all a real ugly grab bag, isn't it? Certainly Rick Perry is nothing to be happy about. So I have no idea, and I don't really care that much who Mitt Romney picks, but nor do I, fundamentally care so much even about the presidential election, if I dare say so, because I don't think Obama is that great. I mean, I suppose if Santorum were to get the nomination, it was going to be between him and Obama, I would really start to worry. But the differences between a Romney candidacy and a Obama candidacy on some major foreign policy issues wouldn't be that great. And on some corporate policies may not be that great either, actually. There would be huge differences on some important social issues, and certainly some huge differences on court issues. So I by no means want to say they'd be one and the same. But, what we see with Obama, and we don't like to see it, and we don't like to notice it, and we don't like to point it out, and we don't like to talk about it, is the continuity between George W. Bush's administration and the Obama administration, or the continuity between, if you go further back, H.W. Bush to Clinton, and then to Bush Jr., and then to Obama. I mean, on foreign policy, there are a lot of equivalencies. and certainly, you know, you saw Obama's decision there to go public with his policy of assassinating U.S. citizens, and Eric Holder just last week or the week before trying to justify that. And, you know, across the board, there have been a lot of similarities here. The bombing of Libya without a not only a declaration of war from Congress, but also, you know, violating the War Powers Act. I mean, that was Obama's doing, and only Dennis Kucinich really dared to speak up loudly on that one. And so, you know, I see continuity certainly in U.S. foreign policy, not in the rhetoric. Obama's improved the rhetoric, but certainly in the actions.
Well, and that assassination, which bill is that out? Because he's passed a couple bills that are just really... I'm not very happy or not sure about.
Well, the National Defense Authorization Act was the really appalling thing, which gives him the right to designate any U.S. citizen as a terrorist and to put that U.S. citizen in a military prison somewhere, anywhere in the world, or to ship that U.S. citizen off to some foreign country or, and I love this phrase, some foreign entity. What the hell's a foreign entity? Would it be like Blackwater's, you know, a mercenary company in Abu Dhabi would be able to, you know, put a U.S. citizen in some dungeon somewhere. I mean, that's what that law says the president can do. And so it's an amazing accretion of power to the executive branch that had it happened with Bush as president, you know, liberals and Democrats would have been screaming holy murder, but Obama was able to pass it.
Is that, to me, it was just a way to pass to say I'm tough on terrorism. I think it's, to me, it's just a political move.
Well, it may be, and he, you know, he said, well, don't worry about it, I'm not going to imprison any U.S. citizen while I'm president and hand him over to the military. But, you know, one, that's no solace, because when after Obama's gone, you know, who knows what the next president will do. And number two, you know, it's fine and well for Obama to say that, but he's also the guy who's asserted the right and actually acted on it to go kill U.S. citizens overseas. He killed that al-Awlaki guy and al-Awlaki's son in Yemen, and he killed another guy who was a U.S. citizen who was an editor for al-Qaeda over there named Samir Khan. Who was, and so he's just deciding who he, without getting any authorization from anybody else, who he can just go single out and bump off. So it's kind of the Corleone style of White House. He's turned the White House into the Corleone compound in a way.
Well, I'm going to get back into the state. We have, there is so much going on above and beyond the Guinness Book of World Records assembly sessions. We have a lot of rights being taken away from the cat in the Capitol right now, and it's really sliding under a lot of the news stories. You're not even hearing about it. You just had, what, six protesters that were just fined for, it is more than misdemeanors for protesting. Can you go into that story a little bit?
Why don't you tell me, because I'm not up to speed on this one.
All right, and I don't have it in front of me, and I know we mentioned it earlier. We had, there was Jenna Pope, Segway Jeremy Ryan, CJ.
Yeah, these are the activists who've been doing a lot of the civil disobedience since the beginning of the assault by Walker.
Yes, and this was from an arrest that happened in August last year, and they were, this is no longer a misdemeanor. They were given a higher, they're given a court trial, and I believe they said it was, and I can't remember what, but it was a higher than a misdemeanor, and they were all fined $200 and found guilty for going against police and a couple other things that they did. And all they did was they were just sitting and protesting.
Mm-hmm. And did this just come down this week, the sentence?
Yes. Hmm. Yes. It
yes.
just did.
Too bad somehow I missed it. But, you know, I really admire the civil disobedience that these individuals have been engaging in over the last year. And I still think, you know, at some point we should gather more people and express our solidarity by engaging in some of the same acts of civil disobedience that they did, which is one of the reasons I did that in the assembly gallery and got a little ticket that was meaningless and got dismissed back in October. But, you know, these courageous individuals have been standing up for our rights, not only our First Amendment rights, but our rights to oppose Walker. And so, you know, I know Walker and the Republicans hate them because they're in the assembly and in the Capitol every day. And when they see Walker go by, or if they see Glenn Grossman go by, or they see the Fitzgeralds go by, you know, they give them a piece of their mind, which is their right, our right as citizens. And it doesn't surprise me now that they're trying to come down harder on them.
And then we also had the arrest of Arthur Kroll Riggs, who his only crime was that he brought a camera into the assembly, wasn't using it. He was sitting in the seats watching it. He doesn't have a case for his camera, so he had it out. And they asked him to put it away. He put it under his shirt, and they removed him because his camera was out, wasn't being used, but was out.
Yeah, and Arthur also has been, you know, arrested before for this ridiculous charge of having a camera in the Capitol. The legislators do not want to be filmed. They're more worried about, you know, accountability and free speech, and they're worried about someone with a concealed weapon who's allowed to bring it in now into the Capitol, which is the absurdity of Wisconsin politics right now.
Speaker Pro Tem Cramer brings in a weapon. He has concealed and carry and has outwardly admitted that he brings it in to the assembly all the
time. Doesn't make me feel safer. I know that. I don't know about you, Sarah, no. But it doesn't make me feel safer when I'm up there.
No, not at all, because he's higher than everyone. He's got a good shot. That just makes me a little – and they're all punchy right now, so I'm a little concerned that something's going to happen. The other thing they've done is they have put plastic, some sort of a dark covering over the glass of the assembly looking in. So when you go up to the gallery, you have these doors. The doors had glass on it, so you could watch the assembly from outside without going into the gallery. They have now covered that. So you cannot see in from outside. You actually have to walk into the gallery to see what's going on instead of standing outside and watching. And
well,
that was – go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just part of that process of limiting the public's view, limiting the public ability to follow what's going on there. You know, they'd rather, you know, they think the public, they think the voters, they think the citizens of Wisconsin are just nuisances, and they, you know, they want to run it like they're CEOs of some privately held Bain Capital company.
It's getting scary. It's getting scary in the state capitol.
Yeah, I mean, it's been scary since these guys walked in. And the great thing, though, about the last year is that they thought they were going to be able to get away with it, that they were going to be able to push it through real fast on the getting rid of collective bargaining, that there would be no consequences, or whatever the consequences would be would dissipate within a week's time. That was what their strategy was. And what the people of Wisconsin showed them was, you know, we're awake, we're not going to stand for it, and we're going to stand up and fight for our rights. And that's been the real beauty, the real energizing, historic, euphoric event of the last year.
And with that, I'm going to say thank you so much for being on. I know you're on a tight schedule and have to get going, and I appreciate you spending the time you have with us.
Sarah, it's always a pleasure. And I'm always learning something when I come on, so that's nice. All right, take care.
That's amazing. You are so knowledgeable. I'm surprised that you do that. But thank you so much for the compliment. You have a great weekend.
Hey, appearances are deceptive. So, all right, take care. All right.
Have a good
Bye-bye.
One. Bye. That was Matt Rothschild from the Progressive Magazine. You could go online to read some of the stuff they're doing at progressive.org. Up next will be Chris Liebenthal from Cognitive Dissonance.
Hi, this is Eric Brandt, host of Civil Discourse, a free podcast that you can subscribe to on iTunes. This past Monday, Dane County Circuit Court Judge Richard Neese stopped implementation of Scott Walker's voter ID law. Neese called the law unconstitutional, stating, "Judgment is rendered declaring 2011 Wisconsin Act 23's photo ID requirements unconstitutional to the extent they serve as a condition for voting at the polls." Neese went on to state, "A government that undermines the very foundation of its existence, the people's inherent pre-constitutional right to vote, imperils its legitimacy as a government by the people, for the people, and especially of the people." A win for the left in Wisconsin, no doubt. But Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen has already vowed to appeal this ruling. More than likely, this law will be decided in the state Supreme Court, where the right-wing conservatives, such as Justice David Prosser, who calls himself a compliment to Scott Walker, will no doubt fight for these laws. Last year, Prosser narrowly won re-election for his next 10-year term, defeating newcomer Joanne Kloppenburg. With record turnouts, 1.5 million people showed up at the polls. Had Kloppenburg won, our outlook would be a little bit brighter. Although we have a victory for today, it just goes to show how important it is that everybody votes in every election. I'm Eric Brandt, host of Civil Discourse, because it's essential for democracy.
You're listening to the Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz, and on now is Chris Lieventhal from the blog Cognitive Dissonance. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm well, Sarah. How are you?
Good. I am doing good. Thank you. Now, there have been some updates in the John Doe investigation. You want to start out with them?
Well, as far as the legal things go, there hasn't been too much of a change. Things are still proceeding despite all the different defendants tries to get out of it using different techniques. Kelly Rainfleisch, who was running campaigns for both Walker and Brett Davis, the chosen one for lieutenant governor, has tried to have a change of venue done that hasn't been heard yet that I'm aware of. But she's still trying to weasel her way out of it. Also, Tim Russell, who has his finger in everything but so far has only been charged with embezzlement, had to drop one of his attorneys, I would presume because he just couldn't afford carrying two high-priced attorneys to defend himself through all this. One of the bigger things that did come out was the fact that it looks like Scott Walker was treating his Milwaukee County executive's office as basically an ATM machine for the GOP. Recent discoveries from going through the different criminal complaints shows that there was a lot of fundraising going on for different candidates, mostly for Brett Davis and Scott Walker, but there were ties into Senator Scott Fitzgerald's people, into the Wisconsin GOP's operatives and fundraisers, even to Representative Robin Voss.
Wow. That doesn't surprise me, but wow, all the same.
Yeah. It's just almost like the caucus scandals never ended. The ones that were tried and heard several years ago in Madison, it looks like they just switched Scott Walker for Scott Jensen and moved it over to Milwaukee County instead of Dane County.
Well, you know, Scott. First name's the same, so it's pretty close, you know?
Yeah, and they're both weasels, so, you know, you have that similarity as well.
It's true. And then they'll both be lobbyists at the end of it. Oh, Scott Jensen already is, so we'll just have to wait for Governor Walker to leave office and become a lobbyist.
The only question is which benefactor Walker will end up working for, if it'll be the Bradley Foundation or the Koch brothers.
That'd be interesting. Should we have bets? Should we do this like the Final Four, see which ones end up?
Yeah, start your brackets now.
Yeah.
Actually, to be a better bracket would be who are the Walker cronies that are going to flip on them. You know, there's a lot of people being charged already, and another thing that recently came out was the fact that Dan Bice from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had reported that he heard that the homes of people that work for Walker's campaign, the real campaign, not the ones that were campaigning at government time, had their homes raided too as part of the John Doe investigation. Similarly, you know, right about that time that this stuff started coming out, Walker comes out and announces that he has officially started his legal defense fund. that would indicate that either he, you know, most of the attorneys that are very familiar with these laws are saying, well, that's a sign that Scott Walker is being investigated himself. Although some of his apologists are arguing, well, it could be one of his agents. Nobody's really said what an agent would be, you know, what the legal definition of that is. But how could one of his agents be doing something illegal and he not know about it?
I'm going to let people think about that while we go to a quick break. So hold on the line, Chris. Think about what that and what agent would it be? And is Scott Walker even the kind of person who would set aside money for an agent of his to go on? So we are speaking with Chris Liebensal from Cognitive Dissonance. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
Hello, I'm Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barca with this week's Democratic Address. This legislative session has been defined by lost opportunities, bad choices, and an agenda that has hurt working families across Wisconsin. The most important issue, by far, is jobs for struggling Wisconsin families. Unfortunately, this has been Governor Walker's biggest shortcoming. The United States has added jobs every month for 17 months in a row. All but six states added jobs last year. All of Wisconsin's neighboring states added jobs during that time. This is good news for our country and our region. Unfortunately, we cannot share in that celebration here because Wisconsin lost 12,500 jobs. And not only was our state one of only six that lost jobs, Wisconsin lost three times more jobs than Missouri, who was second. This is terrible news for our state and our struggling families. And an appropriate reaction would be to spend the last week while the legislature's in session focusing like a laser on job creation. Instead, the Republicans have chosen to focus on bills that are socially extreme, that hurt public education, and harm women and children's health care. Democratic attempts to bring jobs bills forward to promote manufacturing, angel investment, and technical college job training were shot down. Governor Walker pledged last fall to work in a bipartisan fashion on job creation. He indicated his top two priorities were venture capital and mining, and he failed on both accounts. Now he's blaming others for his failure to roll up his sleeves, work together, and get the job done. Well, I don't think we should settle for that. The legislative session is nearly over, and while the Republicans have not shown a desire to devote serious focus on job creation, I want, in the strongest possible terms, to renew my call for a bipartisan process where Democrats and Republicans sit down at the table together and select the bills that we all agree will help put people back to work quickly. It is never too late to work together with a laser-type focus on job creation as we have wanted to do for the past year. We owe it to Wisconsin's struggling families and small businesses to help them recover and give them long-term economic security. Thank you very much for listening.
You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz, and I have more breaking news on the Pam Galloway story. I'm reading from the Daily Kos right now. Do a little quick paragraph reading here. And it basically says that Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald confirmed her plans Friday and said he believed Galloway would make an announcement later in the day. Fitzgerald said Galloway was resigning because of health issues in her family. He said he was confident she would have won the recall election. That means that the Senate will be divided equally between 16 Republicans and 16 Democrats once Galloway's resignation is effective. And it goes on to talk about some questions about the recall. and whether Republicans will be forced into a power-sharing agreement in the Senate with the chamber split between the two parties. So that is coming up. She'll have an announcement later. I wanted to bring that to you. And the Assembly is still in session. They're still working on the MATC bill, and they're going to try to refer that to committee. They're working on a motion a little bit ago that might have already been tabled. But Corey Mason, according to Rebecca Kimball, has dubbed today Glenn Grofman Day in the Assembly. So now, isn't that great? It's Glenn Grofman Day in the Assembly. He should be so honored, Senator Grofman. Now,
that's sort of like a day of infamy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little bit probably not as nice as the guy who came up with the cheese wedge hat and giving him his special day. So now,
I'm so glad they're creating jobs that they can do this sort of thing.
Yeah, it's that laser point focus on jobs. And so, yeah, that works. Now, how much scrutiny is Scott Fitzgerald under in this John Doe investigation?
Right now, nobody knows. I came up with this connection just a couple weeks ago. I don't know if any of these people have even been called in to speak with the investigators regarding this. But, you know, given that the person that was doing his fundraising, first for him, out of his office and then through the GOP, was tied in and sharing donor spreadsheets with the lockers people, you know, it would have to come with some permission. You know, politicians are very protective of their donors, especially the bigger donors, and even keep them secret from other politicians so that nobody is leeching off of each other. But here there's open sharing between the campaigns, between Fitzgerald's people, between Walker's people, and between Brett Davis's people. So, you know, I can't imagine that he did that this was going on without his permission or at least his knowledge of it happening.
Do you think any of this will come out before the recall is done with him? You know, obviously, I don't know. Right now there's no primary. There might be, but the election, I believe, is coming up in June. Do you think this will come out by then?
I would tend to doubt it if there's going to be any connections to Fitzgerald, per se, coming out before then. You know, the DA is doing what he's supposed to do and keeping this stuff secret. A lot of this is just coming together from the things that he had to release, such as the criminal charges after they arrested and charged people like Kelly Rainfleisch and Darlene Link. Whether he's pursuing that angle or whether he even has jurisdiction over that, because Scott Fitzgerald doesn't really have anything to do with Milwaukee County per se, is a whole other question. As far as overall stuff on John Doe, there's no real way to predict that when John Chisholm's going to announce any more arrests or any more activity. We do know that Scott Walker has still been postponing his appointment to come in and cooperate with the DA, as Walker's people put it. I would say there's a good chance that some more news might come out before the elections. However, if people are looking for that golden ring of Walker being indicted, I think that's fairly unlikely. There's still a lot of lower-level people that they're going to want to go after first to help put pressure on having them be willing to testify against Walker or whoever the John Doe is. You know, it could be even somebody higher up the food chain than Walker.
Do we know which campaign people's houses got raided at all? Do we have any idea who these people could be?
No, unfortunately, we don't have that information. The things that have come to me have been fairly innocuous as far as actually naming names. But there would be good guesses that, Walker's campaign chair of Gilkey's might have something to do with it. Some of the emails that have come out of the complaints include, even Michael Grevy, the head of the Bradley Foundation, who is Walker's chairman for the campaign. So, we're talking about some big movers and shakers here. But as far as whose homes got raided, that's a little hard to tell right now.
How much damage will this do to the GOP in Wisconsin when this is all said and done? Do we have any idea yet the long-lasting effects of this John Doe / caucus scandal investigation?
Well, it's going to hurt them a lot, because it's the more that people look into what is known and are tying strings together, this looks just as big as the caucus scandal from 10 years ago. However, the difference is 10 years ago there was the mitigating factor that the Democrats were doing the same thing. There's not that balance right now, so the focus is strictly on Scott Walker and the GOP. Plus they, for some reason, just didn't want to gain many friends in the past year by, doing everything for the special interests and nothing for the people of Wisconsin. So, they're going to have, people's attention very closely right now. And I think that this could end up being very devastating for the GOP in the long run, because it ties in just about everybody that you could want to talk about. You have some of the most major players from the GOP, Scott Fitzgerald's tied into this. And all of these things had to be coordinated by somebody. So then people are starting to look at, former state GOP chair Reince Priebus. What did he know? What was his level of involvement into all of this?
Has Representative Jeff Fitzgerald been named in this as well, or has it just been Scott Fitzgerald?
So far, it's just been Scott.
Do you think that the GOP, as this is ongoing, do you think the GOP is going to protect Fitzgerald? I don't know if they're going to be able to protect Walker if he gets indicted. Do you think they're going to try to protect Fitzgerald and try to keep them around? Or do you think that this is a free-for-all, and depending on what they find and who rolls and how it goes, they could just come be swept up with all this?
I think they're going to try to protect their big players. Most of all, right now they're just pouring all sorts of money and resources into defending Walker. And he's being their worst enemy in regards to this. A key example would be when after he announced that he set up this legal defense fund, legal cooperation fund, his campaign mouthpiece came out and said that they were told he's not the subject of the investigation. Well, there's a couple problems with that. This campaign person, Sierra Matthews, never said who they were, who told them. It could have been the voices in their own heads telling them this, and so that's what they're chosen to believe. Second of all, the rules of John Doe say you're not supposed to talk about it if you're involved in it. So if they had indeed been told that they weren't being the subject of the investigation, they're violating the rules by saying that. So, basically that sounds like a bunch of garbage to me. And, I think they're going to try to defend Walker at least up to a point. But, more stuff keeps coming out, and he keeps shooting himself in the foot like that. They're going to have to end up cutting their losses.
Well, we have about a minute left, and I want you to go into the legal fund for a moment, because this actually comes from campaign funds under certain rules. Can you talk about that for just a second, for about a minute, and talk about what that actually is? You mentioned it before, but I want you to talk a little bit more on the specific statute of why he's setting it up and what the laws say.
Well, the Legal Defense Fund, or, you know, the Cooperation Fund, as I claim it, is set up to specifically defend him against charges according to state statutes of Chapter 11 and Chapter 12. Most of the leading attorneys in the state are saying that the only way that you're allowed to set this up is that if you're investigated, charged, or convicted of criminal violations of Chapter 11 or Chapter 12, which is basically, you know, campaign finance, elections, and illegal politicking. The rules also state that he can't just transfer the $12-plus million from his recall fund to this legal defense fund. He can get people to sign off and say that they're okay with him transferring this money. But I think that's why you're seeing him taking another tour around the country to fundraisers. He was just in Florida the other day to raise another couple $100,000. But it's also an indication that he might be running into some money problems because he's got these two high-priced attorneys that are costing them several hundred dollars an hour that they're putting in. And he's got to be able to pay these people somehow.
Well, and the part of the fact, and I'm going to have to leave it here, so, but part of the fact is that you have to ask permission from the donors. I think you mentioned that, but I want to reiterate that you've got to ask permission from the donors if you could use their money in the Legal Defense Fund. And the donors might be saying no way, because that's going to come out that their money is being put into that.
That's very true, but the one thing I would have to leave also with a note is that by the state laws, the scary part is we're not going to know how he's spending any of this money until next year.
True.
So, you know, he could be playing all sorts of money games right now, shuffling cash back and forth, and nobody's going to know it.
True. Well, either way, Walker's in a pickle. So thank you so much, Chris, for being on today. And if people want to read your blog, where can they go?
They can just go to CogniDissidence, CogniDissidence, .blogspot.com, or they can just Google it and it'll pop up from what I understand.
Hey, well, thank you so much, Chris. Hopefully we can get you on soon to talk more about this.
I look forward to the next time we talk, Sarah.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks. That was Chris Leventhal with the blog Cognitive Dissonance. And I'm going to go right to Melanie Ramey from the Women's League of Women Voters. Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning.
Now, there was a lawsuit that you guys put out last fall, and they just had two courts that said the same thing. Can you talk a little bit about the lawsuit and then talk about what the courts have decided?
Sure. Ours was the first suit that was filed, and it was back in November, I believe. And our suit is different in that it's filed under the Wisconsin state constitution, challenging the constitutionality of the voter ID law, because there is a suffrage section, Article 3 in the Constitution, that says what the legislature may do in terms of governing who can vote. And it indicates that they can only exclude people who are convicted felons or people who are not competent. And other than that, they cannot establish any other groups of people who cannot vote. Because otherwise all qualified people of legal age who are residents are eligible to vote. So by virtue of establishing this voter ID requirement, they simply established a third group of people who cannot vote. And the people who cannot vote are the people who do not have the appropriate voter ID as required under the law that they passed. We know, of course, that that really means that there are about 220,000 Wisconsinites who probably be disenfranchised by this this law. So, in any event, we went to court to challenge the legislature's authority to establish a class of people, another class of people who couldn't vote. And so the judge agreed with us that, in fact, they did not have the authority to enact such legislation. An interesting thing, and I just comment here, is that, you know, the objection on voter ID is not to the fact that there's some identification. It's the fact that that they have to require certain identification and they have to pay for it. It's not uncommon in other countries of the world, for example, that when people reach their legal age, they are issued a photo identification that they take to the polls that identifies them as qualified voters. They do not pay for it. It's an issue to everybody, and that's not a problem. Something like that is not a problem. But when you establish draconian means by which people only can obtain this ID, then we find this extremely objectionable and not right. We know, for example, that people, for example, one of the things they have to do or one of the ways they can qualify is to produce a certified birth certificate if they don't have a driver's license, for example. A certified birth certificate can be impossible for some people to obtain. And we know that people who were obtaining them were paying anywhere from $14.50 to $39.50 to obtain one. And in addition to that, then if they had to obtain a certified birth certificate, then they had to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles and pay an additional fee unless they knew they could ask for it free. So in one sense, this actually has amounted to a poll tax, and that was outlawed in the Civil Rights Act of 1965. So the whole thing was just, first of all, not necessary, but secondly, it was draconian and egregious, and we just could not let it stand.
Well, and the ruling was only for the voter ID, correct? They left everything else in, but they keep their ruling that you don't need to show a voter ID, an ID for
the
next
election. Well, what they did, the ruling simply says that this law cannot be enforced. You know, it just can't be enforced. So the voting goes back to the way that it has always been until there's some other resolution. Obviously, this case is going to be appealed. The state's going to appeal it. And so we'll have to go to appellate court, and then depends on what happens in the appellate court, if we end up going to the Supreme Court, if they take the case, or however this, it's still to be worked out. But the judge's order was a permanent injunction, saying that until his judgment would be overturned definitively, this is the ruling. And the ruling is that this law cannot take effect.
Okay, so it actually cut out the whole law, not just the ID portion of it then.
Yeah, the whole law was essentially, yeah, that you had to get the ID and how you had to go, what was required to get it and all that kind of thing. So that law does not exist because they didn't have the authority to establish a law like that.
Okay. Now, beyond the legal challenges of this voter ID law, how will the League of Women Voters be involved in the upcoming elections? Are you guys going to be, I know you guys are working really hard on registering voters?
We have always done that, and we have a very strong voter observer corps that operates all around the state to observe on election day. We've also been involved in training some of the clerks, or the people who work at the polls for the clerks throughout the state, because they all had to be retrained for the requirements of this new law. Well, of course, now then, since this law will not take effect, this training is put aside. But in any event, we are always very active in terms of registering people to vote and helping people know where to vote and so forth. We are a nonpartisan organization. We've existed 92 years. Our origins are in the suffrage movements, in which we, of course, were instrumental in getting women the right to vote. And so, you know, we've done this for a very long time. We are not, we do not support any candidate. We simply want people to have the information about every candidate, for example, and they make up their own decision and make up their own mind about whom they vote for. So we're interested in educating and getting information out and helping people be sure they get registered and know where to vote.
Will you be sponsoring any kind of debates as well with any of the candidates?
Any kind of what, please?
Debates.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we do this all around the state. You know, we're all over the United States, but of course we have we're the Wisconsin contingent, and there'll be different kinds of debates all around. You know, as the campaigns shape up, we are often asked to come and moderate the debates just because we are nonpartisan and we don't we don't take a side or we don't support a candidate. So we do that, but it will depend, you know, in the local areas, for example, there'll be some contested races in different kinds of races around the state, and so wherever we're asked to help out or to moderate, we do.
And that would also include the recall elections.
Oh, sure.
As well,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. Some of them, I'm sure, will be contested, obviously, and there'll be some contested primaries, even. So, wherever we are asked to assist, then we try to do that.
Now, moving on, your lawsuit here. Moving on, you said it's going to hit the different levels of you're going to go to the state Supreme Court and possibly the federal Supreme Court after that, however it's going to move. What's the next step for you after this? Is it going to obviously it's going to depend on what the rulings are, if it's being upheld or if
to... the next, and see, ours is under the state constitution. We're not dealing with the federal law here. It will be appealed and will be the appellate court. And so we'll go there, and that court, which is a 3-judge court, will rule, and they will either affirm the judge niece's ruling, or they will overturn it or whatever. And depending on what happens there, either the state or us could appeal on then to the Supreme Court. As you know, the many, many cases go up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court takes very few cases that come there. And so for example, the Supreme Court took this case, if it got up there, they took the case, then, of course, we would be there to argue that it was unconstitutional. Clearly, if the Supreme Court took the case, whatever their ruling would be the definitive ruling. So, the timeline on this, these all kinds of court cases have lives of their own, and so this one will have a life of its own. And so now the ball sort of is in the court of the state, as they will be the ones to make the appeal. And they have a certain number of days to file the appeal of the case, and so we will wait and see what happens with their appeal.
Right. You have about 1 minute left. Could you, in 1 minute or less, say how a non-competent voter is defined under state law by chance?
Well, competency is a legal decision. If a person is incompetent, you have to go to court and show they're incompetent. A judge appoints them a lawyer. The lawyer investigates the situation. Their guardian ad litem then makes a recommendation to the court if they feel the person is competent or incompetent, and then the judge either decides yes or no. It's not very easy to get a person declared incompetent. I mean, you may think you know a lot of incompetent people, but it is it has to be judged by a court. So, and sometimes obviously people are not competent to manage their own affairs, but it's not something that's decided willy-nilly. It's quite a serious kind of situation that a court renders an opinion on.
Well, thank you so much for being on today,
sure.
Melanie. It was great talking to you. Can you give a website real fast to let people know where to go for more information?
Our website is www.lwvwi.org.
Okay. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend, and hope to have you guys on again as this continues.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Right.
Bye now.
Bye. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the Sarah Schultz Show today. I'd like to thank my producer, Bill, for his work on the show. And I'd like to thank Rebecca Kimball for keeping us updated on what's going on in the Assembly. She is at Progressive Magazine. That's progressive.org. You can download the show from iTunes or listen to it at blogtalkradio.com/Sarah Schultz. Or you can listen to it off the Sarah Schultz Show free app for Android phones and iPhones. Don't forget to tune in Saturday to WIDE 99.1 LPFM in Madison, Tuesday at on WHYS 96.3 LPFM in Eau Claire, and on Sundays at 8 a.m. to WFAQ 92.9 LPFM in Mukwonago, Waukesha. Remember, Wisconsin, forward to get forward. Have a beautiful weekend. Have a great week, everyone.